and welcome to Stuff We've Seen. I'm your host, Jim, and with me, as always, is my special guest, permanent co-host, Teal.
Permanent special guest.
Well, you know, in case you have a sub, we'll have a not-so-permanent special guest occasionally.
Right, a temporary special guest.
Yeah, so to start off, I have a question before we even, you know, get rolling here. The question is, if today's technology existed back in the day, do you think that Rupert Pupkin and Marsha would have a Jerry Langford podcast? And if so, what would they call that?
What would be the title of their podcast?
Yeah. You've got to know that they would have one.
Yeah, they would have one. It would have to have Pupkin in the name somewhere, I think.
But I would think that, you know, his downstairs basement would be completely decked out with this amazing podcast studio.
Pupkin's Basement might be a good title for it.
Yeah.
And do you have one? Do you have a title for it?
I don't, but that's why I'm asking you. But it occurred to me, I was like, you know, Rupert Pupkin, maybe he would have been saved from the whole stalking Jerry Langford thing if he had a podcast to dedicate all his energies and his devotion to Jerry Langford.
Well, yeah, but he might have just poured all that energy into the internet.
That's just true.
Yeah. True. I mean, Pupkin with the internet, that would be a whole different movie. I mean, it's really, you know, you're bringing up something, which is that whole era of movies. And it's why we're now seeing more 80s period pieces, because people want to do stories that are pre-internet and pre-cell phone.
Yeah. Or they just reboot it and then you have Rupert Pupkin for today. So we could be in trouble if somebody ends up listening to this and getting a bright idea. So this show, Stuff We've Seen, is really devoted to mostly movies. I guess it could be TV, but it's stuff we've seen in the past, possibly in the present, maybe even talk about things in the future, because we liked going to the movies, seeing films in a theater, and we come from an age when it wasn't just something that people did. They did it in droves. There were no video games when we were growing up. And
there was home video.
Well, there was home video, but
and it was the beginning of the video store in the early 80s.
Early 80s, but, you know, we lived in the 70s when...
Absolutely.
There wasn't, you know, I didn't know a single person in the 70s that had cable. It wasn't until I moved.
No, I didn't either. I was the first kid in my class to have a VCR because my parents had it for work.
And I was
and
also...
And that must have been 1982.
Oh, that was earlier than me.
Yeah. But, you know, it was not easy to get movies on video then.
No. I think you and I have chatted, and we can mention again that when you first got your VCR and I got my VCR, you basically rented movies from the place that you bought the VCR, which is
exactly.
Usually an electronic store.
Yeah, the electronic store, the stereo store.
And they had a shelf of maybe 20 films.
Yeah. Yeah, mine had 100, and I remember my father saying, wow, 100 movies, how will we ever watch them all?
Yeah, and that's the thing, we did, like, some of the movies that I ended up seeing was strictly by the fact that it was available.
Exactly, yeah, you had to rent something, and those were your choices.
So, you know, we grew up in the days before video, and then at the dawn of video, even throughout, while video did make a dent into movie ticket sales, movies were still the thing to do, and we were shaped with our experiences. And I think one of the things we're going to talk about today are some of those experiences going to see films in the theater that, you know, had an impact on us. It may not have been that the movie was the greatest, but there was something about going to see it at a theater.
And the experience of seeing it in the theater and how that impacted
yes.
us. Yeah.
You know, so each of us, you know, we've looked over a list of films that the other one has supplied to us, and we're going to pick. And I'm looking at a list that you supplied and going to ask you a question or two about some of those films, and then you can pick up.
I'll look at your list and do the same.
So no, I'm going first.
Oh, okay.
So you just
You're
sit back,
first.
Buddy.
Okay. Yeah. You go first.
You had a very interesting list. And again, you know, I have seen all but one of those films. I mean, the reason why I haven't seen one of them is that it's really only available on, you know, streaming or whatever on a really bad print. And that's Gallipoli. So I'm not going to ask you about that right away.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's really hard to find a good copy of Gallipoli. Right now, it's like almost a pan and scan transfer that's been blown up to fit high def screen. And I tried to look at it the other day, and it was horrible. So we'll pass on that for now. But
wow.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we're lucky that one thing is this day and age with today's technology, you can see almost any movie or a whole bunch of movies that you could never find, and you can see really amazing prints of them. So that's kind of cool.
But I frequently come across a film like this where it's something fairly obvious like Gallipoli that you think would be available that is just has terrible prints or terrible transfers.
Well, this is one of them because I saw that it was available this weekend. I took a look and couldn't get past the first 5 minutes because the transfer was so bad.
And you've never seen it?
No. You know, it was one of those things where I was influenced a lot by what I saw in the newspapers, the movie section, which for me was the Boston Globe growing up. And I lived for the film section almost every day of the week, but particularly Sunday, because there would be a lot of film articles, and they would tell what's coming up for the next week. And that way I could start getting my strategy of like how to get my parents to take me to one of these movies.
Right.
And then Thursday, because it had previews
of what's coming, coming out on Friday.
Yep. And then there would be a calendar section in the Globe, and that gave even more details, a lot of capsule reviews, and some of the little hidden theaters that didn't have the money to advertise in the big sections on the weekends would still advertise a little bit in the calendar. So, I mean, I checked it all. And then, of course, Friday would be the big day for the movies to come out. And then I would start to figure out, okay, what times everything was, where was a movie playing at the drive-ins? Was it playing with something suitable? Would my parents maybe take me? I was a real freak. But
see, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, so we didn't have as many options.
Yeah, you were in Western. Was it considered Western New Hampshire?
Yeah, Western New Hampshire. And so, you know, our nearest town, 12 miles away, had a multiplex with six screens. And that was pretty much it.
Yes. I mean, you know, I was almost in a mecca compared to you because I grew up in the suburbs at a time when the suburban movie multiplexes were growing.
Yeah. And actually a bunch of the movies on my list were not seen at the multiplex, but at the college theater.
Oh, because I was wondering. So this is going to take us to the first film I was going to ask you about. What you had on your list was A Greer, Wrath of God, which is a Werner Herzog film. It was originally released in West Germany in 1972, but the United States didn't see it until the spring of 77. I'm assuming that you probably saw it sometime in the 80s.
I saw it, I think, in 1981, so it would have been 10 years old.
Wow. And was this at the college theater?
And it was at the college theater. And so several of these films are from the college theater. And I had a friend whose parents on Saturday afternoon would go into town, and they would drop us off at the college theater because it was $2 a ticket or something.
Wow. So you would just go no matter what was playing?
It didn't matter what was playing. And sometimes it would be two or three films in a row. And they would just leave us there for 6 hours. And so it was foreign films. It was, you know, it was stuff that they would show at a college, right? That you couldn't get the multiplex.
Wow.
And they would just drop us off. We'd be totally alone, you know, 10, 11 years old. And we would just sit there and watch movies all day. There'd be college students there and some people from the community, but a pretty small audience. And so, you know, they drop us off, we go in, and suddenly A Greer, Wrath of God would start up. And we didn't, you know, I hadn't seen a lot of movies with subtitles, and I had definitely never seen anything like this movie before, which was just, you know, it doesn't really have a traditional narrative structure or plot, so it's kind of hard to tell where it's going or what the pacing is. And it just feels like it goes on forever. The story is that there's some conquistadors on a raft going into, I don't know where they are, in Colombia, I think, going into the jungle, going inland in South America. And they dwindle off as they go. They get diseased. They get attacked. They get they drown. A bunch of the crew died in the making of this movie. And so it was just this experience of something so outside of Hollywood, really, and what I was used to and seeing in American films. And this was something that was just so raw and brutal and almost documentary style in the way they made the film. And so it just completely blew me away. It was one of those Saturday afternoon, go in and you see this, and then, like, you know, my friend and I showing up at school on Monday morning trying to explain to people what we had just seen, and being really unable to articulate how completely different it was than everyone else's experience, you know, telling the story of what happened in this movie. And they just thought it was the strangest thing ever. And it was. It was a really, it still is kind of an odd movie.
A couple of things you said really encapsulate, you know, why we decided that we would jump into this whole podcast thing, because, you know, we know no one's doing it right now. And, you know, before it gets really hot, we might as well start doing that.
Yeah, get in
on the ground floor.
The podcast gold rush.
Yeah. But no, it's that I think it's very hard today to go into a movie blind.
Yes.
You almost know. I mean, it's just, you know, kids today, if there's something they want to see, they know about it. It's very hard to go in, sit down, have a movie start, and you know zero about it.
Yet, exactly.
We grew up in a time where you could. And
that happened. I almost put this on my list, but that happened to me with Angel Heart. And I think I was about 16 or I was probably 17. And I knew nothing about this movie. I just walked into the theater and sat down.
I knew about Angel Heart more about the controversy that, you know, it had been rated X for the big sex scene. And
yeah,
that,
no, I knew nothing. I didn't even know who was in the movie. I saw the poster outside the theater and walked in, and that was it.
Aside from this controversy and that, you know, Lisa Bonet, and it was all that stuff.
Right.
And the movie, when it came out, it didn't do well. It didn't get great reviews. My friend and I, we still wanted to go see it, probably for the controversy, but we knew nothing about what the story actually was. And so going in, you know, we were pretty captivated by it because we had no idea that it was a, you know, detective story, a mystery, and, you know,
it's supernatural. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was exciting, I think, for the reasons you said. It's always exciting when you go in to a movie and have no idea what you're in for. And it's, I think, a lot of the titles that are on your list, and you'll probably find that are on my list, have that element where,
yes,
there was this unexpected, I wasn't sure what I was getting into when I went to see this particular film, and that was what blew me away.
Yeah, and you kind of can't, it's a different experience because you can't quite get a handle on the film. This was the point I was making with Augur Wrath of God. It's like, it could have been a 6-hour movie for all I knew, right? The plot didn't develop in a way where you feel the pacing. And so you kind of don't know you don't even know how long the movie's going to be. You don't know what it's going to do to your patience.
Well, yeah, that's actually interesting, too. When you're getting dropped off for an afternoon, the last thing you're probably paying attention to is start and stop times. So you're watching this journey, and you have no idea how long it's going to be.
No, we're just walking in there, and they're going to pick us up at some point in the future.
Oh, that's that's great. I mean, I didn't have quite the same experience, but I saw the film later. I saw it in film school. You know, the stuff that you just relayed to me, it kind of reminds me, it'd be a great double feature, I think, with Apocalypse Now.
It would be a great double feature with Apocalypse Now. In fact, this could be a whole subgenre of kind of...
the Heart of Darkness journey.
Yeah.
Call to Adventure movie.
The Journey into Darkness, I think, is...
Well, I think the parallel stories that you mentioned with Werner Herzog and his crazy Klaus Kinski inspiration, they went on a mad journey to make the movie, just like,
yes, they did.
Coppola went on a mad journey.
And it's really the only way to end up with a movie like that is to go on a mad journey to make it. There's that famous shot in the movie where a butterfly. Do you remember this shot?
I honestly have not seen it in 30 years, but I'm now intrigued to go back to see the film.
Yeah, I really like the film. And I mean, I like the film. I know a lot of other Herzog fans who that's like their least favorite Herzog movie.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know why. Maybe because it's popular, but because of that experience I had with it as a kid, I still love the movie. I think it holds up really well.
When we see films as children, we see it with a different lens than we do as adults. And sometimes, we'll rewatch a movie that we loved when we were kids, and
Yes.
it's like, really? What the hell is this all
What
about?
was I thinking? Yeah.
I sometimes why I've been watching, a lot of things. Some things just in preparation for doing this little program we're going to
Yeah.
be attempting to pull off. But it's amazing when you watch some of these older films and think, at one time, this was a first-run movie at like a
Yeah.
major movie house, and audiences actually went to it, and it was fairly popular. And you look at it now, and you just can't imagine what society was like at a time when this was the popular film. I mean, I've been going through doing some research through old Boston Globes. I have a subscription to this site that has access to them. And
Right.
I'm looking, and what amazes me, the pages are just filled and filled with all of these foreign art films. Boston was like a big
Oh,
college, it's a big
interesting.
college market. So, next to Los Angeles and New York, which were like the big guns, Boston would get a lot of things that other places wouldn't because the college students love going to see these art films. And there was so much that I myself wish that I was old enough to have gone to see, knowing that all these art movies were playing there. I
Right.
was kind of shocked. And Aguirre, Wrath of God, I did find it. It premiered in the summer of 77
Okay,
in Boston.
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so again,
It yeah, just to interject for a second, by the time I was in high school, let's see, probably by the time I was 14, my friends and I would drive to Boston to see movies. It was about a 2-hour drive, and we'd leave early in the morning, we'd go down, we'd see 3 movies, and then drive back at night.
now, do you remember some of the theaters that you would go to? Or like, I mean,
Oh,
I know all of them. There
I'll
was
be able to
like,
look them up, but a lot of it was we'd go to see the art films that weren't playing locally, but we would also go to see something like Die Hard in 70mm with surround sound.
they had some isolated theaters in Boston. There was like the Charles, and that had
Yes.
three. The Cherie, which is the place where you
Yes.
probably would have seen Die Hard because it played there in 70 millimeter.
Yep, that is yes, that is where I saw it.
And then from there, you could go up the street to the BU campus area and go to the Nickelodeon Theater, and
Yep,
they showed
absolutely.
nothing but art films back then.
Yeah, we would schedule out the day in advance, and have to like run between theaters and stuff. Well, you and I definitely did some running between theaters once
Yeah, back in the day.
back in the day.
But and then that's another thing too, is we're not picking them specifically for this reason, but hopefully there'll be some titles that we discuss in the various episodes that people will not have seen,
Yeah.
but will be intrigued to say, I should check that film out. And Aguirre, Wrath of God, I have not seen it in almost 30 years, but
Yeah,
it's definitely
it's
worth
worth
checking
checking
out.
out. It's definitely worth checking out.
And I'm going to definitely recheck it out, but now I have to go and see if it's actually available. And
Right, what kind of print there is.
yeah, I mean, it could be. I haven't checked for this on FilmStruck, but I have that subscription to FilmStruck slash Criterion's online service, and it's a never-ending
Yeah, and that's the kind of
cornucopia of
movie they
movies.
would have, they'd be likely to have.
I'll get back to you if I see the
Okay.
film. We'll rediscuss it, but
We'll rediscuss it. Good. Yeah, I may watch it again too, just yeah, if we want to talk about it. So I left this off my list, but it really should be on my list, and I feel like it's obligatory that we talk about it. And we have talked about it before, but Star Wars.
Well,
And
that might be too obscure a film for
it
this.
might be too obscure
I
film,
don't think it's been talked about very much.
but I think we just have to mention the fact that for people of a certain age, this was an experience for a lot of people. And it's a sort of a cultural milestone or an event in a lot of people's childhoods of Gen X,
Well, yeah, I
I
mean,
think.
I think what is interesting about it seems that there hasn't been a generation yet that hasn't had its own, like, the first time I saw Star Wars experience.
Right.
For our age group, we were that generation of children at the right age. When we talk about that, the perfect timing for something,
Exactly.
being 6 and 7, I was 7 years old, when Star Wars came out. And I was just actually looking this up. What's interesting, you know, it's like, when did it become a phenomenon? How did it become a phenomenon?
Right.
When?
Yeah, because it took a little while to build, right?
Well, when it first opened, it did open in Boston. It opened at the Charles Theater, and it was the Wednesday, May 25th. That's kind of well known.
Yeah, Star Wars Wednesday.
The review for it in the Boston Globe that day was super enthusiastic. It was as if the inner child of this reviewer had come back, and the person was so touched that he was basically begging people to go see this movie. And it was he basically said plot points and other things in this review are just pointless. This is a film that you must experience, and there are things in it that will sear in your brain beyond the screening, and it'll stay with you. And I think that's the reaction that people who saw it, and this guy, and then I read a future review.
And that's not even a kid, right?
So no, this was a grown adult, and he was basically continuing every time he did a capsule review was young, old, it doesn't matter, go see this film. And I realized, you know, that's the kind of word of mouth, because it played at the Charles Theater exclusively for about 6 weeks before it hit the suburbs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this was all happening right before the end of my school year. I don't recall seeing a preview for it. I knew nothing of this movie. And then the summer comes along, and I have my 7th birthday, and then my sister has her 5th birthday, and like a day after is when it hit the multiplexes, and my dad sat us down, which is really weird. He wanted to talk to us, and he said that he had seen this movie, and it was the most amazing movie, science fiction, robots, space creatures. It was just crazy. And that he thought that we were old enough to handle it and that we should all go see it. And so we were intrigued and said, okay. And I knew nothing about this film. And just as you...
Right, so you went in blind.
Just like, you said with a great wrath of God.
Well, I did too, but I was 6, and so it's a little...
you know, but still, it's that idea of like, you know, it wasn't, Mom, please, can you take me to this movie? It was like, they are taking me. I had never seen even a PG film before. Back then, the only movies kids saw were G movies that came out from Disney, and that was it.
Right.
So we go to this theater. It was completely packed. And then this, you know, movie unfolds with all of these words kind of zooming into space. And then, you know, it started up with the first battle. And, you know, my movie going experiences just were never the same after seeing Star Wars.
Yeah, so what changed? Was it you understand movies in a different way, right? Because it can have this sort of visceral impact.
Well, yeah, because now I'm like, there are other types of movies out there. I'd only seen Disney films. That's it. You know, I mean, I knew there were other movies, and you'd see previews. When we'd go to the drive-ins, there was always a whole slew of trailers that would be in between the first and second feature. And I'd see all these movies that looked really cool, but I was not old enough to see them. But seeing this movie, I mean, it was kind of like, I loved going to the movies, always enjoyed the experience, but movies became a thing for me after Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. My story is very similar to Star Wars. My father came home and said, we've got to see this. I'm taking you to see this movie.
Had your father seen it?
He had seen it. Yeah. Oh, gotcha. He saw it and just thought the kids have got to see this. And it was one of the first movies I saw in the theater. I'd just seen Disney films before, like you.
And was this, did you have to go to that local multiplex to see this?
No, this was pre-multiplex. The multiplexes hadn't really opened.
So where did you go?
So this was an old, I believe, called the Latches Theater in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Oh, it's still there today.
And it's still there today. Yes. And it was single screen, big old style movie house, New England style movie house with one screen. And it was an event. It was packed. And we sat, you know, five or six rows back. And somebody poured soda down my back. It was just like this crazy party going on at Star Wars. The kids, the popcorn flying. it was just, people were excited. It was palpable in the theater. So anyhow, I just wanted to touch on Star Wars because I feel like we just have to say it. It's such a such an event in so many people's childhood. And I was thinking about it the other day, too, in film school, somebody saying, I thought the reason we were all in film school is because we saw the making of Star Wars on TV and thought it looked like fun. So I think Star Wars influenced a whole generation of filmmakers, too, that had this experience and thought, I need to make movies.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, for years growing up, Star Wars was like the benchmark, like, oh, the greatest film of all time, and there's no other better movie. And, you know, it wasn't until I was older that I watched it again and still enjoyed it. What I think is lost by future generations is that the experience of seeing it when there was really nothing like it before, and that moment, I mean, to me, special effects have obviously come a long way.
Right.
But at the time, it was like a leap.
It was a huge leap. Yeah.
And there wasn't anything fake looking about it to me. I thought it was just like you were in outer space.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. What's funny is my 10-year-old daughter still does think it's the best movie ever made.
Well, I think she has good taste because I still think it's the best of all of the Star Wars movies. But you know what, though? There's a reason. I mean, again, I think we could put Star Wars and talk about it on a separate podcast. But there's some, you know, especially when you delve into reasons why I think it's been hard for them to duplicate Star Wars in future installments. And it has nothing to do with the fact that you can only, you know, Star Wars comes along once. But it's really about the way the film looked compared to the way the movies look today.
Yes. And it has a timeless look. It's something Spielberg used to be good at, too. You know, I was thinking about another movie that is here, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is on both our lists.
Well, we can talk about that next because, you know, because we mentioned it.
Because we mentioned it. But there's something timeless about the direction and the cinematography in Raiders of the Lost Ark. It holds up really well because there's something just classical about the look. The editing and every aspect of it. It's aged incredibly well.
And of course, it was also, again, made at a time when both producer, George Lucas of Star Wars, and director, Steven Spielberg, they hadn't quite had the families that they have now, but they were remembering what were the movies that we liked to see when we were kids.
Yes. And they wanted to make one of those.
Yeah, and of course, today's, you know, grown-up filmmakers are making the movies that reminded them of when they were kids, and that's already, you know, 80s films or 90s films.
Right.
But yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark, since you mentioned it, I'll jump in with my story, because it's another example of a movie that going in, I knew nothing about.
What?
And when I say I knew nothing about it, here's the deal. In 1981, when the film came out, Steven Spielberg meant nothing to me. And you'd think, well, he made Jaws, but I was too young to see Jaws in the theater in 1975. And
what about
I did
Close Encounters?
Well, I did, but I mean, I didn't know, you know, I was seven and I didn't know Steven Spielberg. The name wasn't important to me.
Okay.
And
right.
The name, like when I saw Jaws on TV, could not connect that the same person who made Close Encounters also made Jaws.
Right. Okay.
And so again, Steven Spielberg, he wasn't on my radar screen as somebody that I need to go see the movies he makes. So I started seeing trailers on TV for Raiders of the Lost Ark. That was the first time I heard of the film.
Okay.
And to me, it looked like some kind of weird, like Western. Because he
wears that hat.
Well, he wears that hat, and they showed some scenes like out in the desert with a truck and some, you know, cars and stuff. And it really didn't appeal to me. Raiders of the Lost Ark, I didn't know what that meant. I thought it was just some like hokey, you know, action adventure thing. Again, no appeal.
Oh, wow.
So there was a screening. They were having back in the day. They used to do a lot of sneak previews. The local multiplex would have, it's a major Hollywood preview tonight. And they would pair it with some movie that was probably from the same production company that was getting ready to get out of the theaters and wasn't doing so well. There was a sneak preview, Raiders of the Lost Ark, on a Friday night. And it was playing with the Sean Connery movie, Outland, which is a sci-fi film. You ever see that movie?
I saw it in the theater.
Okay, so
yep,
it's so funny. Your dad and my dad must have liked, you know, my dad loved Sean Connery.
Let's see. Peter Hyams directed that, right?
The good old fashioned Peter Hyams, yes, the director of such classics as 2010.
And it's basically High Noon in space.
It is very good. Yeah, I think actually some of the reviews kind of described it as High Noon in space.
Yeah.
I think
it is consciously High Noon in space. I think it's intended to be a remake.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie that, ironically enough, you can catch it on Criterion Filmstruck. They were doing a Peter Hyams retrospective, which sounds funny, but it's mostly because they on the TCM side, which is the Filmstruck side,
right.
They have a lot of MGM titles and things, and so they have a collection of his movies, and that's one of them.
I've not seen it since it came out. So.
I can't imagine it holds up well, but I had seen it just a few weeks prior with my dad, I think at a sneak preview of that movie before it had come out.
Oh, okay, right.
And it didn't do well, so it was getting ready to go out of theaters. And usually the rule of thumb was, even if there was a sneak preview that I wanted to see or my dad wanted to see, if the movie that was with it we had just seen, that was it. Case closed.
Right.
For some reason, my dad wanted to see Raiders of the Lost Ark. Maybe he thought it looked good. I didn't want to see it at all, and neither one of us really wanted to see Outland. We had just seen it. but my sister had a softball game that day, and neither one of us wanted to go to the softball game. So the only way that we could get out of it was to go, we're going to go see this movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, we go, and the theaters, before the multiplexes got all chopped up in these tiny little caves, there were bigger caves. And this was like a theater that had like 500 or 600 seats at the time. And I was pretty packed. And I still sat there going, all right, I'll just, you know, this will be painless. I can get through it. And the movie started and, you know, saw Steven Spielberg's name come up and not registering. Harrison Ford's come up. His name wasn't even registering. Like, I wasn't making the connection that that was Han Solo. Then, about 5 minutes into the movie, when he's going to get the little idol, and all hell starts breaking loose, something, you know, happens to me inside and the theater. And this is, I think, the first time that I could actually feel like electricity. It was this kind of adrenaline rush that's what really addicted me to the movies, that a huge group of people could start having a shared experience, recognizing, wait a second, we are seeing something here that no one else has seen, no one else knows about. Something's going on here. And when he swings to get away from Belloc and his hired goons and the natives, and you think, oh, wow, you know, he's like this Tarzan guy. He swings, but instead he just drops into the water. Like, he's not even that good at it. Like, people started to, like, applaud. It was, whoa.
Oh, yeah, people, when he gets on the plane.
Yeah, it was like he got out of it.
People cheered in the theater, yes.
And then he's like a professor. So, like, suddenly we see, wait a minute, but he has a day job. And, you know, I'm in. And then, you know, it goes from one, as they say now, set piece to another. And I can tell you, I know it was like, it's cliche now because it was such a famous scene. The scene where he pulls out his gun and he shoots the swordsman.
Right.
Literally, the whole audience broke out into a thunderous applause. And I had never experienced anything like it. It was the first time I could ever imagine like an audience behaving that way. And they were so jazzed up that when the film was over, I was on a high.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen in my entire life. And I was just like thinking that nothing was ever going to top Star Wars. And now I had my movie.
Yeah. And my experience was very similar the first. I remember almost a gasp when the Paramount logo turns into the mountain at the beginning.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah, there was this moment of people kind of thinking, oh, this is something just a little bit different, kind of special. The reason this was on my list is I think I saw it 14 times in the theater.
What?
Yes.
I think I saw it like 5 times. And that was a lot. I mean, like, you know, I measured like the movies that were really great were ones that you wanted to go see a bunch of times. But 14 times.
Well, here's what happened is we saw it in its original release a couple of times. And then there was a theater. This was a year when I was living in Dallas, Texas. And there was a theater, a walking distance, maybe 3 blocks away, that was a second run theater, and it was a dollar to see the movies there. And so if there was a movie we liked, my sister and I would just go after school every day. It was $2. And we would go to Raiders of the Lost Ark like twice a week.
Because I had all the multiplexes, I always had a variety of films to go to. So, I mean, I really couldn't see one movie over again. But, you know, my wife describes having that one town theater and ending up seeing specific films like a whole bunch of times for nothing short of the fact that there was just nothing else to see.
Exactly.
So you went and saw it a bunch of times.
But this is just because we didn't have TV, right? So, like, what do we do after? We were latchkey kids. And so we would just go after school.
Wow.
Saw a bunch of movies that way.
And I think...
Second run movies. Yeah, I saw Dawn of the Dead for the first time at that second run theater.
So that's how... Because that, of course, you know, as these come up, that was another movie on your list. So that's when you saw Dawn of the Dead, was when you were in Texas?
Yeah, and it was at a second run theater.
And they didn't care that you were just a kid going to see a movie like that?
They did not care at all. The other movie that I remember seeing there that had an impact on me, but I left it on my list, it was such a bad movie. It's one of the worst movies ever, is Caveman, starring Ringo Starr.
Oh, all right, let's stop you right there. It's not the worst, because I saw it a couple times in the theater as a kid. It was stupid, but I liked it.
Okay.
It's not a very good movie.
Not a very good movie. I tried watching it again recently and made it through about 45 minutes. It was mostly just kind of flat and boring.
Yeah.
It
wasn't... I watched it a few years ago because, like, I watched it with my oldest son, and, you know, he got a few laughs out of it, but it was definitely, you know, there were certain films that they would release back then. I keep calling it back in the day, but, you know, the 80s and the 70s were a much different time, where there were a lot of films that were made for various nefarious reasons by very shady producers, and they were made for a quick buck.
Yep.
And they were made to make a quick buck. They weren't, like, you know, designed to be released in 4,000 theaters.
Right.
Big supermarketing. They would usually get released right around school vacation week, which is what happened with Caveman, to pack it in with kids during vacation week. And then
isn't it R-rated?
No, it's not.
No, okay.
It's just one of those movies that came out before PG-13. And you watch it
because
now and say, how could it not be rated R?
It has a lot of sex jokes.
We're going to go back to Peter Hyams for a second.
As always, back to Peter Hyams.
Okay, so there's...
always goes back to Peter Hyams.
There's this movie, and I got to tell you the story because it's so great. So I was intrigued when I first saw that Filmstruck had this Peter Hyams retrospective. I was like, I didn't know he warranted a retrospective, but okay, let's take a look. And he had made this film in the early 70s. It was one of his first feature films. And I looked at what the description of the plot was, and it was about a girls' school in Massachusetts in the like late 50s, and this girl falls in love with Parker Stevenson, and I'm like, I gotta watch this movie. So my wife and I watched this film, and it's really bad. It takes place late 50s, but everybody looks like they're from the 70s. They had no budget to do stuff. And they had, like, you know, like cotton snow on the ground. And it was actually filmed probably not filmed in the wintertime, but it was filmed somewhere in Massachusetts. And it was kind of fascinating because they have to go into Boston at some point because the girl's roommate gets knocked up and she has to do something about it. And of course, you know, this is back in the days of back alley abortions. And it was probably created at a time right before Roe v. Wade. So they were trying to capitalize on, look what awful things have to happen to women. So the movie is very melodramatic, very bad, but it's rated PG. And it is really very R-rated territory that it's bordering on. And today it would absolutely be rated R, not even PG-13. But I started to drift away from the movie, and I was looking onto the Internet Movie Database, and I got across somebody had written a review. And it said that they saw this movie when they were like just like 11 or 12 at the right. local town theater. And because it was PG, their parents took them. And halfway through the movie, their very, you know, conservative parents were so shocked that they went out demanding their money. And the ticket counter girl was like, I can't give you your money back. And the mom grabbed the girl by the braids and said, you're giving us our money back. And the girl said she was so humiliated that her mom did that. And she didn't got their money back. And I thought it was so funny because that was like a better story than the entire movie.
Right.
But again, it reminded me of these small towns where movies would show up and whatever was playing, everybody...
You would just go see whatever was playing.
Would go see it.
You would just decide, we're going to the movies. And you would just go to the theater and what was going, you would see. If it was PG. Yeah, I mean, I saw... The Jerk was one of the first R-rated movies I saw. And that was one of those situations where my dad just took me to the theater and that's what was playing.
And did he know the movie was rated R when he took you? Or did he just not... I mean, I'm just kind of curious to how those decisions were made.
What went into those parenting decisions? I'd have to ask him. I don't know. He just kind of said, hey, we're going to see this movie. And it was, you know, there. It's an R-rated movie.
Because you would have, you saw it first run?
I saw it first run.
Right, so you must have been about 8.
Yes.
Because I was 9 and I wasn't allowed to see it.
Yeah, I was 8 and I saw it, just me and my dad. And I think, I don't know, my mother was at it. I don't know where my mother and my sister were, but just the two of us saw it. So much of it I didn't get. And, right. You know, that's something like with R-rated comedies. As a kid, you just don't get a lot of the jokes. And so they're almost not offensive because exactly. You don't get them.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure I haven't seen The Jerk in years, but I'm pretty sure it'd probably be PG-13 today.
Yeah. I think it would probably. Well, I don't know. There is some swearing.
Well, yeah. But, you know, I always look at like. So my son is 10 and I've let him see a handful of radar movies. And usually that's kind of like, especially pre PG-13. I always judge. Would this movie with a couple of edits been PG-13? And if it was, you know, can he watch it and he'll be fine. And
but there's stuff from the 80s that's PG that now would be PG-13.
And there's stuff that's PG from the 70s that would most likely be R today. They didn't know what they were doing with the ratings back then.
But yeah, The Jerk was one of those movies where I just it was so above my head on so many things. But I remember, you know, again, trying to explain it to people at school Monday morning. And just they had never seen anything like it, an R-rated movie, comedy.
Well, that's the thing.
Filled with sex jokes.
I don't think that that's probably changed much. I think that there are still a lot of kids. I'm sure my son is the same way, where he'll go and he goes to see, you know, film festivals and stuff with me, and he's seen, you know, a handful of radar movies now, and he probably goes back to school and the kids are looking at him like he's got three heads because
I'm sure
he has friends that their parents won't even let him see PG-13 films.
Right.
We were just the lucky ones, I guess.
Yeah, well, my parents were not that concerned about ratings.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. It's, you know,
my mother
to your kids about the stuff.
Yeah, they would talk exactly. But my mother, you know, thinking of seeing Gallipoli, and that was just me and my mother when we saw Gallipoli. My mother hates animation. Oh. And so she hated Disney movies.
So you had to go right to the adult content because
because she had no patience for kids' content. So she would just say, "Yeah, you're coming to the adult movie with me."
And I think for me, you know, I mean, again, I think that there was a little bit more of an innocence. I feel that why I saw all those Disney things wasn't because I just loved them. It's that my parents were sort of following the rules.
Well, absolutely. Those were the kids' movies, and that's what you took kids to.
Yeah, and it really wasn't. And I don't think we're going to have to cut our time short for now, but we can pick this up on our next episode. You know, there were some things that happened in my life that kind of changed the game for me being able to see some of these more adult films. And it's when my parents kind of took the shackles off and decided, you know what? You like movies, you can see whatever we want you to see and stuff. But believe it or not, we have flown through this a lot of time just jabbering away on movies. And, you know, again, we may be the only people who ever listen to this.
We may be the only people who've ever done a movie podcast.
We could be. We could be. Yeah. Yeah. Don't pay attention to that skit that happened on Saturday Night Live this weekend where they made fun of a movie enthusiast who also has a podcast.
I did not see that.
Good. You don't want to know. But, you know, this is our first episode. We hope to do more, and stay tuned for, you know, potential social media, et cetera, where you can get in touch with us and let us know what
and
you
think. Like us on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook and Instagram. I know. We'll see what happens. All right. For
okay.
Stuff
Until
we've seen. This is Jim and my permanent guest co-host, Teal.
And signing out.
All right. Talk to you later. And go see some stuff.
I'm going to see some stuff, yes.